You're listening to an African Elements top news story for June 19, 2026. Please visit our website at africanelements.org for more daily news. How colonial shadows fuel the Eastern DRC security crisis. On June 19, 2026, the newly appointed chairperson of the African Union Commission, Mahmoud Ali Youssouf, convened urgent consultations in Addis Ababa. He sat down with diplomats of the International Contact Group for the Great Lakes to address the rapidly escalating Eastern DRC security crisis. The meeting represented an effort to coordinate regional de-escalation and save a collapsing peace framework. For many observers, this high-stakes diplomatic gathering highlighted the ongoing struggles for African self-determination on the global stage. However, the roots of this crisis stretch far deeper than the current headlines. The ongoing violence in Goma, South Kivu, and the surrounding highlands is a modern manifestation of a legacy that spans over a century. To understand the current security crisis, one must look closely at the history of colonial manipulation and global resource competition. Without this deep historical perspective, the diplomatic efforts in Addis Ababa remain detached from the realities on the ground. The modern ethnic divisions in the Great Lakes region are not natural or ancient. During the colonial era, Belgian and German administrators transformed a historically fluid social structure into a rigid hierarchy. Before European arrival, the terms Hutu and Tutsi denoted flexible social classes tied to wealth and cattle ownership rather than fixed identities. A Hutu who gained significant wealth could easily transition to a Tutsi status, and a Tutsi who lost their livestock could become Hutu. Unfortunately, Belgian authorities, influenced by pseudoscientific racial theories, decided to formalize these distinctions. In 1933, they introduced a mandatory ethnic identity card system that permanently classified every Rwandan as Hutu, Tutsi, or Tiwa. This system made previously fluid social roles rigid, hereditary, and legally binding. By favoring the Tutsi minority, the colonial powers fostered deep resentment among the Hutu majority. This divide-and-rule legacy directly paved the way for the 1994 Rwandan genocide and the subsequent conflicts in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo. Following the independence of the Congo from Belgium in 1960, the young nation immediately faced intense geopolitical struggles. The democratically elected, charismatic nationalist Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba sought to reclaim the mineral wealth of the nation for the benefit of the Congolese people. Fearing that Lumumba would align the resource-rich nation with the Soviet Union, the United States and Belgium launched covert operations to destabilize his government. After the brutal deposition and assassination of Lumumba in January 1961, Western powers backed a young military officer named Joseph Mobutu. Mobutu went on to misrule the country as a corrupt, pro-Western dictator for over three decades. He plundered the vast resources of the nation while receiving heavy political and financial subsidies from Western interests in exchange for keeping the country open to foreign extraction. This long era of dictatorship hollowed out the security apparatus of the state, leaving the eastern provinces highly vulnerable to armed rebellions and foreign incursions. This history created a cycle of historical exploitation that continues to trap the region today. The modern crisis in the Eastern DRC erupted directly from the aftermath of the 1994 Rwandan genocide. When the Tutsi-led Rwandan Patriotic Front seized power, approximately 2 million Hutu refugees fled across the border into the Eastern Congo. Among these refugees were the armed genocidaires who established bases inside Congolese camps, eventually organizing into the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, or FDLR. Seeking to neutralize the FDLR, Rwanda and Uganda invaded the Congo, initiating the First Congo War in 1996 and the Second Congo War in 1998. This massive conflict dragged in nine African nations and resulted in millions of deaths due to violence, starvation, and disease, making it the deadliest war since World War II. Although peace agreements were officially signed in 2003, the underlying ethnic competition and resource extraction remained entirely unaddressed. In this post-war vacuum, Tutsi-dominated militias formed the March 23rd Movement, or M23, claiming to protect local Tutsis from the Hutu FDLR. In December 2025, regional leaders signed the Washington Accords under the mediation of the United States and Qatar. This bilateral peace treaty promised the withdrawal of Rwandan troops from the Eastern Congo and mandated the dismantlement of the FDLR. However, this historic treaty was structurally built on a peace for minerals model. It established a regional economic integration framework that linked security guarantees to Western corporate access to the critical minerals of the Congo. The accords required the Congolese government to grant American firms a right of first offer on lucrative mining projects. In exchange, Rwanda was rewarded with the development of mineral processing facilities that allowed smuggled Congolese resources to be legally exported to Western markets. Civil society groups and human rights observers strongly condemned this arrangement as a neo-colonial compromise. They argued that it traded sovereign geological assets for a fragile truce while marginalizing local communities. Just days after the accords were signed, the truce collapsed as fighting flared up once again.
By early 2026, the fighting in the eastern provinces evolved into a highly dangerous, high-tech proxy conflict. Both the Congolese military and the Rwanda-backed M23 forces introduced advanced, unmanned aerial vehicles into heavily populated urban areas. The Congolese military deployed armed combat and kamikaze drones, while the M23 utilized sophisticated anti-aircraft defense systems. This technological escalation took a devastating toll on innocent civilians who were caught in the crossfire. To compensate for its weak national army, the Congolese government outsourced its defense to local armed groups. They integrated a loose coalition of self-defense militias, known as the Wazalendo, into their military strategy. While framed as a patriotic defense force, the Wazalendo operate with zero official accountability. Human rights organizations have documented severe abuses committed by these militias against local civilians, showing that state-backed proxies only worsen regional instability. The global demand for high-tech consumer electronics directly links Western citizens to the suffering in the Eastern Congo. The DRC is the global epicenter of the critical mineral supply chain, producing over 70% of the cobalt of the world and holding 60% of its coltan reserves. These minerals are essential for manufacturing the lithium-ion batteries that power everyday smartphones, laptops, and electric vehicles. To fuel the green energy transition of the global north, hundreds of thousands of Congolese work as informal miners under extremely hazardous conditions. An estimated 40,000 of these workers are children who toil for just a few dollars a day. Rebel groups, including the Rwanda-backed M23, routinely seize and tax these mineral-rich sites, using the profits to buy advanced weaponry.
This direct connection means Western green privileges are paid for through the physical exploitation, displacement, and suffering of Congolese laborers. To change this dynamic, global observers must support efforts that seek to shed colonial legacies of resource theft. The composition of the International Contact Group for the Great Lakes reveals deep inequalities in global diplomacy. This group is primarily composed of Western nations, including Belgium, Germany, France, the United States, and the United Kingdom. These donor nations meet regularly in Western capitals, or Addis Ababa, to harmonize diplomatic messaging and determine the geopolitical future of the Great Lakes. However, the lack of equal African representation in this primary membership highlights a paternalistic dynamic. It allows global North powers to make critical decisions about African sovereignty from a position of financial leverage. This neo-colonial framework reduces sovereign African nations to passive recipients of Western-designed policies. For true and lasting stability to occur, African organizations like the African Union must lead the peace processes rather than relying on external Western donor groups. The ongoing military conflict is severely worsened by a massive, compounding humanitarian and health crisis. In early 2026, a highly lethal strain of the Ebola virus began spreading through the conflict-ridden health zones of South Kivu and neighboring Uganda. The active hostilities have displaced millions of people, making quarantine, treatment, and contact tracing virtually impossible for health workers. This healthcare catastrophe was severely exacerbated by geopolitical shifts in international funding. In January 2025, a United States executive order ordered a sudden pause on all foreign assistance programs.
Because the United States previously funded approximately 70% of all humanitarian and healthcare programs in the Congo, this sudden freeze devastated local medical systems. Critical clean water projects and disease surveillance networks collapsed, leaving millions of displaced people highly vulnerable to the outbreaks.
During the Addis Ababa consultations on June 19, 2026, the African Union Commission attempted to rescue the collapsing peace architectures. Chairperson Mahmoud Ali Youssouf emphasized that there can be no military solution to this long conflict. The AAU pushed for an immediate ceasefire, the withdrawal of all foreign troops, and the creation of safe humanitarian corridors to contain the deadly Ebola outbreak. To achieve lasting peace, the region must move past extractive economic models that prioritize global corporations over human life. True stability requires protecting Congolese sovereignty and ensuring local populations benefit from their own mineral wealth. This rising pressure on resources is generating organized worker resistance across the continent. The diplomatic efforts in Addis Ababa represent a critical test of African leadership in the face of deep historical trauma. Copyright, African Elements.